This is Marcus Sahaba Online Radio, broadcasting to South Africa and all over the world.
Our own president and the cabinet ministers had been informed about it all, so they all knew about it. So, like, right from the very beginning, at the highest level in South Africa, this callous attitude towards foreigners and their rights in South Africa took seed. So maybe, in actual fact, this is something that has grown from the top up rather than the bottom down. And we're joined on the phone now by Dale McKinley, and he's from the Right to Know campaign. Dale, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you.
Dale, we've been discussing in detail today the attacks on foreigners in Johannesburg. Now, we've just received a WhatsApp message from a listener in Jeppestown who say they're on the attack again.
Yes, what's the question?
Attacks on foreigners have been happening repeatedly in South Africa. We had the whole renditions issue. We had at least 12 foreigners renditioned out of South Africa in the early decade of the first decade of this new millennium. But politicians themselves, is this a fish head rotting from the head, or is this coming from grassroots? Is this a grassroots issue, or is this something that has also got elements of our leadership who are involved? Complicity, responsibility, and what do we do as we go ahead? Have our politicians thrown petrol onto this fire?
Yes, the politicians, I mean, particularly the ANC, I mean, it goes all the way back to the 1990s, in fact, the early 2000s, where statements by the ANC, very populist sort of demagogic statements, trying to blame foreigners for crime, talking about the national interest and threats to the integrity and the identity of South Africans, and this construction of a false sort of sense of a sort of supranational identity of South Africans as something separate from the rest of Africa. This has been going on for a long time, and what that has done, combined with economic policies that have essentially marginalized and made lots of working people out of jobs and created a material desperation, if you look at that cocktail of sort of political opportunism and populism, as well as economic policies that have left people behind, and then on top of that, you get a situation where immigrants that are coming into the country are pushed into the sort of shanty towns and other places. What you have, what we were calling a constructed competition for resources, and that is a fairly toxic cocktail that has developed over the years. And what we're seeing, what we saw in 2008, what it was in 2012, and now again, is a result of that cocktail. So yes, there is. It's a combination of things, but certainly the leadership, and that is both mostly the ANC, but increasingly in our city in Johannesburg, also the DA under Herman Mashaba has done similar kinds of things and said very similar kinds of things. They are certainly responsible, and they certainly have to take a degree of culpability for what has happened.
Herman Mashaba has been on TV. He's been photographed in websites and newspapers, stepping out there like the mayor, coming in and trying to save his burning city. Do you think he's going to be successful?
No, not with the policies that he has. The DA has played the xenophobic card, not just in Joburg, but nationally. If you remember leading up to the last elections, one of the DA's key planks was secure our borders. And this was an attempt to try to play to this kind of trope of discourse of foreigners are invading the country, they're taking the DA's policies and overall policies are like that. No, Herman Mashaba is an opportunist. He wants to appear to be one thing and does exactly the opposite. And then when things get bad as they are now, and then you have attacks, and you have the practical thing. He rushes in trying to say that, you know, the police must keep law and order, and this is our city and everything. But when these things are boiling underneath the surface, and when civil society has asked Mashaba and the ANC to do things, particularly to stop these kind, they refuse. So they only react after the fact, and that's an indication of opportunism more than anything else.
Yeah, Johannesburg, I must say, even in the 90s, had been identified by many people as having a very kind of antagonistic relationship, not just with foreigners, but with hawkers and the informal sector in general. It was noted for its aggressive policing of its streets. I mean, Johannesburg was also foremost in terms of formalizing trading areas for hawkers and so on. But of course, that was never going to be enough to, you know, accommodate the tide that we find flowing into our cities on a regular basis, not just from foreign countries, but from all over South Africa. Do you think that the police in South Africa in general and in Johannesburg in particular must also take some responsibility for this?
Absolutely. We have worked with many different immigrant communities over the years, both in Johannesburg as well as in Cape Town and other major cities, in Durban as well. And the story is very similar across the board, which is that the police are, and with a few exceptions, we might add, but generally speaking, the police approach is one to take advantage of the immigrants, to basically suck money from them, get bribes, arrest them, harass them, intimidate them, and then basically release them later on, or if they're not cooperating, send them to the Mandela Deportation Center, to and then what you find is a recycling of the same people coming right back into the country.
Yes.
So we have an immigration system that needs, first of all, that needs to be upgraded, but our police in across the board, generally speaking, are not playing the kind of role that they should be playing. In fact, oftentimes what we find is that the police are in cahoots with local businessmen or taxi owners or other places, people that are targeting, for example, particularly small businesses owned by immigrants, which has been the key attack point of communities, the mobilizing. You know, when you remember when the Alex program started, it was leaflets from small businesses in Alex that were being circulated and drive out the foreigners and the immigrants. So yes, the police definitely have a lot to answer for. It's just to say that there are some that are trying to do their job, but I think overall it needs serious, serious attention.
The way, I must say, in the early part of this millennium, when the attacks started happening with more frequency, I was concerned that there might be a foreign intelligence element to it, or even a local intelligence element to it, given our intelligence services history in the hostels, in the townships in the early 90s. I mean, I was a reporter in the newspapers, so I was involved in all of that kind of stuff. The way the intelligence services used the IFP in Carter and to get hit squads to destabilize. Do you think that there might be an intelligence element to this behind it in terms of stoking xenophobia?
Well, there's certainly no empirical proof of that yet, but I think if we were to speculate, one could make an argument that that might be the case, because what has happened, obviously, since the mid-2000s, when the factions in the ANC began to fight it out, is the intelligence services became totally factionalized. So we've seen them playing particular political roles, spying and intimidating people. So one, it's not beyond the possible that certain factions within what we could call rogue elements or whatever. I don't think as a whole the state security agency would have had a program of this, but I certainly think certain agents or units or others that wanted to create mayhem, certainly wanted to create problems for the other faction in the ANC, might have been able to stoke this. The bottom line here, though, is fundamentally that it's a total and complete failure of intelligence in our country. If intelligence services were doing their job, they would have been able to spot what was happening. They would have been able to deal with it beforehand. That's what the job of intelligence services is. And they've been completely absent, both within all of the nature of this. You haven't heard anything from them. You haven't heard why they did not pick this up why this is a national interest issue. This is a national security issue for sure. And the intelligence services have been completely absent. So we must ask the question, right, what are they doing, or whether they're not doing, and why?
Yeah, now another problem is, How do we address this? How do we fight back on this? Because, you know, two trucks were shot were satellite in Moy River last night. But of course, now those attackers have disappeared into the darkness. How do you speak coherence to incoherence?
Well, I think there's a multiple response that needs to happen. One is that the police and the intelligence services need to do their job. They need to investigate. They need to track down the perpetrators. They need to arrest. This is the case we've seen in our country with people who have taken money from the public purse and have been corrupt.
Yeah.
We hardly any of them have ever paid any price for what they've done. They've just disappeared, resigned. They recycle themselves and other. So if we have a failure of implementing our laws and tracking that, then we've got a problem. But beyond that, obviously, in terms of the social and political side of things, it's also a question of if the ANC, you know, is claiming that it's a progressive movement, that it comes out of Pan-Africanist and African solidarity, then it must. A lot of people that are doing these things would either support or the ANC or other political parties, and the political parties themselves must rein in their members. They must tell them that this is completely unacceptable. Instead, they sort of let them go, and they half encourage them to do that. So, and then civil society as well has a role, obviously, to play in fighting a more social, I think, battle in terms of people's consciousness, reminding where we come from, and African brothers and sisters, as well as South Africa's. South Africa is not an island. People must remember that South Africa's, a large portion of South Africa's trade is with the rest of Africa.
Very much so.
So if other African countries as well decide that they want to target South Africans, I know there was some truck drivers the other day, some in Mozambique and Namibia, that were threatening to burn South African trucks and attack South African drivers. If this gets out of hand, they were going to have a regional conflict as opposed to simply a domestic one.
Yes, definitely. There are already organizations getting organized in Nigeria where they've been targeting MTN and as well as ShopRite shops in Nigeria. And they say they're going to continue targeting South African companies specifically because of the xenophobia against their brothers and sisters that they're experiencing here in our own country.
Okay.
Well, Dale, thank you very much for joining us. It is a pressing problem, and it's definitely something. Well, we've been keeping our eye on it. Well, we're a Muslim radio station, so we're involved with all of the rendition stuff 10 years ago. But this thing is really worrying, and we hope that some sort of sanity is going to reign in our country. Dale, thank you very much for joining us here this morning on Marcus Sahaba.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Take care. Bye. Well. South Africa, South Africa, South Africa. The problems never go away, do they?